The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following program is sponsored by Cleveland Right to Life and is responsible for its content.
Welcome to From the Median, a daily report from the front line of the pro-life movement, discussing two worldviews that are driving our culture in opposite directions. From the Median asks, which side of the road are you on? What direction do you want our culture to go? Tune in as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life. And now your host, Molly Smith.
Good evening and welcome to From the Median, where we are concerned with the middle ground, not just to understand both sides of an argument, but also to awaken the consciences of those who are neutral or indifferent to this, the greatest civil rights movement of all times, the pro-life movement. This evening we continue our Bringing America Back to Life series. Tonight we will feature a presentation from our 2023 convention. Our speakers' ideas will inspire you with principles, experiences, and wisdom as they join us to pave the way back to life through prayer, action, voting, and education. It is my pleasure to introduce Alex Schadenberg, a world leader in exposing the dangerous, slippery slope of legalized euthanasia and assisted suicide. Alex has been the executive director of the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition since July of 1999 and became the international chairperson in 2007. EPC aims to build a well-informed membership of groups and individuals to establish an effective social barrier to euthanasia and assisted suicide. A world-renowned speaker, Alex has spoken throughout Canada, the United States, Australia, New Zealand, and Europe as he works tirelessly with many other groups to establish worldwide opposition to euthanasia and assisted suicide. His talk, Preventing the Spread of Assisted Suicide in America, illuminates how real this threat is in our country.
So this is actually a phenomenal conference. I was just speaking a few weeks ago in Texas, and they had a similar conference in Texas. Texas is a great state, but you haven't beat. This is also because you've got Molly and a team here that are just unbelievable, and that's why you have such a successful event here. I'm going to go through issues around euthanasia and assisted suicide fairly quickly, not to say that the other speakers spoke quickly. I'm going to try and keep all the Canadian comments out of it, no hockey, no things like that, and there'll be good time for questions. So, you know, preventing the spread of assisted suicide in America, well, this has been a big push right now, and a lot of people just, they don't really think about this issue of assisted suicide in the same way as maybe they should. They're looking at it in a different sense, but many people view assisted suicide within the paradigm of suicide. Now, suicide is a negative concept to most people because they've had negative experiences with suicide. Nonetheless, it's seen as a personal act. So you hear it being sold as a personal act. My body, my choice, right? Most people, they justify assisted suicide based on an idea that the person is dying anyway, and all we have to do is reduce their time of suffering. All they're doing is reducing their time of suffering. And they also look at this issue as, people are saying, I'm uncomfortable with assisted suicide, but they're fearing a bad death. I'm going to turn this off, actually, so I don't get a reverb. So they fear a bad death. So this is the whole thing with assisted suicide. When they're selling this concept to people, they're selling fear. You know, they're saying to people, you have to legalize assisted suicide or you're going to have a bad death. And that's how they're really promoting that. And, we oppose assisted suicide, and actually my talk can end right here, because it's knowingly prescribing or providing lethal drug cocktails to a person upon request. So what is this? We oppose killing people, right? And in previous talks, you heard the same thing. I don't think when we get into all these things, I'm going to give you a lot of information, but when you're talking to somebody about issues like assisted suicide and that, it's important to try and keep your arguments simple. We want to get into these deep, deep arguments with people about all these different facts and things, and we should really just say, I oppose killing people. And then go on, because it answers all the questions. Assisted suicide is about approving an act to cause the death of another person. That's what the doctor, the nurses are doing when they're involved with this. And when they legalize it, when you look at the laws, whether it be the Oregon law, the Washington state law, or the crazy law in Canada, what did they actually do? They gave doctors and nurses the right in law to kill you. That's what they do. They give them full legal freedom to kill you. Okay? And yes, you might ask for it, but we can get into that later. Assisted suicide is legal in California, Colorado, Hawaii, Maine, New Jersey, New Mexico, Oregon, Vermont, Washington State, and the District of Columbia. And it's also permitted in Montana based on a court decision called the Baxter decision, which the court said that they created this thing called a defense of consent. So if in Montana, if a doctor were to assist a suicide and someone were to be upset about it, the doctor would only have to say the patient consented. So they created a defense of consent, which is really a weird concept. There are at least 10 states right now debating assisted suicide in 2023. So this is a big issue. And I want to be very clear with you. The media wants you to think that there's a roller coaster coming at us to legalize assisted suicide. And, you know, we just should be accepting that this is what's happening. The reality is in 2022, no state legalized assisted suicide in the U.S. None. We beat every single campaign to legalize assisted suicide. So it's very important. There's not a roller coaster effect at all going on. What it is that, yes, they've won one state a year, the other side, and that's terrible. That's really upsetting, of course. The point of it is every time they win a state, they're saying, oh, look, you know, assisted suicide's coming your way. Anyway, in 2023, there's quite a few states debating it. I'm really concerned about Connecticut, Maryland, Massachusetts, and New York. Those are the states I'm really concerned about right now. And you'll notice they're all East Coast states. Minnesota's a concern, but I think we'll defeat that one. The good news is Virginia has a bill and it was already defeated. So that's good, one state down. Connecticut, I'm very concerned about because last year they had a bill. Last year was the 10th consecutive year in Connecticut to debate an assisted suicide bill. It was defeated 10 years in a row. And last year was defeated by one vote in the Judiciary Committee. And so we're very concerned because the Democrats control Connecticut and they switch things up to make sure that it gets through committee. We're assuming it will go to a final vote this time because they switched up the Judiciary Committee to try and get that assisted suicide bill through this year. There were no new states, as I said. Washington State and Hawaii did pass their assisted suicide expansion bills last year. And I'm going to get into this all with you in a second. Oregon's removed the residency requirement. Now, why is this important? You don't have legal assisted suicide in Ohio, and thank God for that. But Oregon has removed the residency requirement, and Vermont is right now they're debating a bill. It looks like it's going to pass to also remove their residency requirement. What it means is they're setting up assisted suicide centers in the U.S. Oregon has their first assisted suicide clinic now, and they've been killing out-of-state people. So what they're saying in the assisted suicide, I'll get into that with you in a minute. The assisted suicide lobby is also promoting big time assisted suicide by telehealth. So what they're saying is that if you can't come visit them, that let's say you're an out-of-state person, that they would want to be able to approve you by telehealth. So what is the plans of the assisted suicide lobby? And I think this is important. We got to know the enemy, right? First, they're trying to legalize assisted suicide in more states. They've been working on that for many years. But they're also expanding the laws where they've legalized it already. So we see in states like Oregon, Washington State, et cetera, where they've eliminated the waiting periods. They're removing the residency requirement. They're also expanding who can do the act. And I'm going to get into that with you in a minute. They're redefining who can do the act. Why are they doing that? Because there's too few doctors willing to do assisted suicide. So if you add nurses in and doctor assistants and all these type, other people, then suddenly you have more people that you can call upon who might be willing to kill. They're trying to allow deaths by lethal injection, so that's euthanasia. So I should have said this in the beginning. The difference between euthanasia and assisted suicide is this. Euthanasia is what we have in Canada. It's done by lethal injection. They kill you by lethal injection. So what is that? Homicide? That's homicide. Assisted suicide is very similar. The intention's identical. The doctor agrees that your life is not worth living. The difference is that in the case of assisted suicide, they prescribe you lethal drugs, but you have to take it yourself. So when you understand the difference between assisted suicide and euthanasia, it's not the drugs, It's not the effect of the drugs. It's not the intention around it. What's the difference is how it's done. In euthanasia, the doctor injects you. In assisted suicide, the doctor gives you the drugs or prescribes you the drugs. You take them yourself. They're launching court cases to create a right to assisted suicide. That's a big push. They failed in Massachusetts last year. They had a case in Massachusetts claiming that the Massachusetts Constitution had a right to assisted suicide in it. Same idea, you know, a right to abortion idea, right? You know? And they're trying to permit assisted suicide by telehealth, as I'm saying. And they're trying to change the definition of who can have assisted suicide. So in states where assisted suicide has been legal, they are really changing this concept of what it means to have a terminal illness. So people with chronic conditions can also have assisted suicide. And as I say, they're trying to establish these regional assisted suicide centers. So with eliminating the residency requirement. So just to give you an idea, I said Oregon has eliminated the residency requirement already. Vermont's debating a bill right now to eliminate the residency requirement. And it looks like with the political stuff in Vermont, they're probably going to do it. Minnesota has an assisted suicide bill, and if you look through it, there's no residency requirement in that bill. So if they were to pass that assisted suicide bill in Minnesota, obviously they'd be setting up an assisted suicide center in Minnesota also. And I think that you have problems in a few other states like New Mexico, etc. too. So let's go through the data. I think this is important. I know my wife always says to me, Alex, don't go through the data. It's boring. But, you know, Star Parker, she tells me she reads the data. So I think I should go through some data with you, right? Okay. Star said she reads the data. Okay, so according to the 2021 Oregon Assisted Suicide Report, I don't have the 2022 report, so I can't give you the data. According to the 2021 report, there were 238 reported assisted suicide deaths. And I say reported for a reason. Not all the deaths are reported. I'm going to get into that in a second. And 383 lethal prescriptions written. Now, when you look at that, you have to go into the report, read the data. What did it say? It said there was 106 deaths where the ingestion status was unknown in 2021. Now, what does that mean? Well, I already said there's 383 lethal prescriptions and 238 reported deaths. So one of the ways to look at this discrepancy is you have 106 deaths. So those are people who received the lethal drugs. They were approved for them and they received them. And they died. But the government has no idea how they died. So some of those people might have died a natural death. That's true. You mean the drugs were beside the bedside. They died naturally. Some of them might have. And some of them might have died by assisted suicide. But the Oregon government has got no idea. Okay, now if you read the Oregon report, they're very clear. The Oregon Health Authority has been given no right to investigate. They've got no investigation powers. They've got no budget for that. It's just not part of the law. They just don't. So of those 106 deaths, they don't know. They just don't know. Now let's think about this. Does that seem safe? 106 people died that they know of, but they have no idea how they died. But they know they received the lethal drugs. They just don't know if they used them or not. They've got no idea. And those numbers are going up every year because last year, the 2020 data showed 80 deaths where the ingestion status was unknown. The 2019, I believe it was 64. So it's going up. So what am I saying? Well, if you heard me speak a few years ago, you'd hear me talking about how these Dutch studies have proven that about 20% of the euthanasia deaths are just never reported. The doctor kills them but just doesn't report. Well, I believe that's what's going on in Oregon. I'm pretty sure. The problem is there's no study to prove I'm right. Okay? The time of death ranged from 1 minute to 47 hours. No one dies actually in 1 minute. Nothing personal. They don't die in 1 minute. But that's what the report says. 1 minute to 47 hours. And the longest time of death in Oregon was 104 hours. In fact, several people didn't die at all. They received the lethal drugs. And after many, 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 many hours, they wake up and wonder what happened to them. Two people were referred for a psychiatric or psychological assessment. So let's put this in perspective. Of 383 approvals and written lethal drug prescriptions, only two of them were sent for a psychiatric or psychological assessment. So if you hear when you get to the end of my talk and I'm talking about why people ask for assisted suicide, you realize that that's pretty crazy, actually. You're assuming that people are not experiencing psychological, psychiatric conditions as they are asking for this. One physician was referred to the Oregon Medical Board for failure to comply with the law. But if you go actually through the data about that, it's very hidden what actually happened. Oregon Governor Kate Brown in July of 2019 signed Bill SB 0579. What it did is they originally had a 15-day waiting period. So what she did is she changed that. The government changed that. And they said that if you are seen as terminally ill, meaning you're actually dying, they could waive the waiting period. Okay, so that means you could have a same-day death. The 2021 data shows that in 81 of the deaths that were reported, 15 of them had, 81 of the deaths, the 15-day waiting period had been waived of the total deaths that were reported. So Washington State and Hawaii right now are debating expansion bills. Vermont expanded assisted suicide in 2021, is now getting rid of their residency requirement. So what am I saying? I'm saying the other side is moving on this, and it's coming at us, and we have to be aware, because you don't have it now in Ohio being debated, but you will get an assisted suicide bill sometime soon. Your neighbor's going to be facing this. Many of you don't come from Ohio, and you're in states that are already debating this question, and we have to be very effective in how we deal with it. We have to know what it's all about. Sometimes we make a mistake not fully understanding the issue. Here's the point. The existing approval system in every jurisdiction where it's legal, there's no oversight of the law. How does it work? Well, it's a self-reporting system. All of the states require two doctors to approve, except for New Mexico. New Mexico, it's only one. The doctor who approves your death is also the one who writes the lethal prescription, so there's no third-party separation. And on top of it, the doctor who writes the prescription has to send in the report. And if you look at the data, that doctor's rarely at the death. So here's the point. When some of you were driving here and were a little bit late and didn't want to miss that first talk, because Star Parker is a great speaker, and you were speeding down the highway a little bit, did you call the police to come pick you up because you broke the law? Did any of you do that? No. Are these doctors going to self-report abuse of the law? No, they're not going to do that. So self-reporting system means what? The law is designed to protect the doctors who are willing to kill you. That's what it's about, okay? Washington State legalized assisted suicide in 2009. They're currently debating HB 1281. Now, why am I showing this? Because this is what they're pushing for changes. They're wanting to allow non-physicians to be able to approve your assisted suicide. Why? There's too few doctors in Washington State willing to be involved with assisted suicide. So one of the problems is that if you have too few doctors, well, let's find other people who are going to be able to do this. They're trying to shorten the waiting period from 15 days to 7 days, but they also want to waive the waiting period if someone's deemed to be actually terminally ill. If you're that close to death, why don't they just let them die? Why do you have to kill someone just because, they want to allow the lethal drug cocktail to be delivered by courier or mail. Now, let's think this through. During COVID, how many of you were receiving packages on your front, on your front porches? And did you know anybody who ever had a package stolen from you? And here we're talking about lethal drug packages showing up on your front doorstep. Four bills right now to expand assisted suicide are being debated. I can go through all this, but let's go on to the next. Okay, court cases. So I told you about court cases. So there's the Shavelson court case that was in California last year. Thank God it failed. There was the California conscience rights case. I'm going to get into that very quick. There was the final exit case in Minnesota that's been going on for years, probably will go nowhere. And there was the Kleigler case in Massachusetts where he claimed there was a right to assisted suicide in the state constitution. Then there was the Gideon versus Brown case. So that was the case where the Dr. Gideon is a doctor in Oregon who does assisted suicide, and he said that it was unconstitutional to have a residency requirement for assisted suicide. Now, what was he doing? And this is the first thing you got to get your antenna up on. He was defining assisted suicide as medical treatment. Is there anything medical or treatment about assisting a suicide? No. There's nothing medical or treatment about it. But he was saying to the Oregon Medical Board that because this is a form of medical treatment, therefore you cannot have a residency requirement, which makes sense. If you're going, let's say you need a certain surgery and there's a doctor in the state beside you who's an expert in that, and you're getting referred to that doctor and you're going to that other state for your surgery, why can't you, right? So he's saying the same thing about assisted suicide. What happened is Oregon dropped the residency requirement. They're also really pushing here the issue of telehealth, and I think that's very much concerning. Vermont has already passed that, assisted suicide by telehealth, meaning the doctor doesn't even have to visit you or see you, and they can approve your lethal drugs, and you can be killed by lethal drugs without ever having even visited or seen that doctor. In August 26th, a Connecticut woman and a doctor in New York supported the Compassion Choices case in Vermont. Now, that case has not been heard, but I already told you Vermont's planning to remove the residency requirement. So you see this big push to allow assisted suicide clinics. You should be concerned about this, because what's going to happen in Ohio is you're going to have somebody who's going to go to Vermont or Oregon and die by assisted suicide, and then you're going to see this article in your liberal newspapers telling them about how beautiful this death was in Oregon, but she had to fly to Oregon to die by assisted suicide. And isn't it terrible in Ohio that we don't allow assisted suicide? You're going to see stories like that. And they're going to really play it up. They're going to talk. They're going to find a really bad case, because there are some bad human conditions. I agree. And they're going to just play it right up. And of course, then there's going to be some Democrat in your legislature is going to say, well, we have to fix that. The Shavelson case is showing you that the assisted suicide lobby really wants euthanasia. They're not happy with assisted suicide. They prefer what Canada has, which is lethal injection homicide. That's what they prefer. I have to be really honest with you. Euthanasia is more effective. You can imagine that a doctor injecting you with lethal drugs is probably a more effective way than you taking those drugs yourself, especially since they're awful, those drugs. They're awful. They burn your throat. They taste like crap. You know, the fact of it is that you can see how that works a little easier, having someone do it to you, right? Nonetheless, Shavelson in California argued, and he's an assisted suicide doctor, Shavelson, he argued that there's certain people with medical conditions that really can't carry out assisted suicide, therefore we need euthanasia. And thankfully, in June, the U.S. district judge said no. He said no. Now, what's the difference between euthanasia and assisted suicide? Well, one, as I say, is homicide, and the other one is assisting a suicide. Both are terrible. But let me tell you, euthanasia is worse. Why is it worse? It just makes it so easy to kill. That's why it's worse, okay? California also, their assisted suicide expansion bill, I'm going to move on. But when they passed that a couple years ago, the expansion bill, what they also did is they took away doctors' conscience rights. So what happened is a group of physicians, the Christian Medical Dental Society and the Catholic physicians, got together and they challenged that case in the courts successfully, because what the California law did is it said that someone who requests assisted suicide, even if the doctor doesn't support assisted suicide, that request would be taken as the first request. And in the California law, it required two requests. So if you're a doctor who opposes killing people and someone's asking you for assisted suicide, that first request made you complicit with the law, according to the law, because that was the first request. You were part of the assisted suicide process. So these doctors got together, they challenged it, and the judge in the case agreed that this was taking away their right of conscience and struck that down. And I said that right here. So the judge actually made a very clear thing that the SB 380 violated the First Amendment rights of doctors by requiring them to participate in assisted suicide. Now, of course, the other side wants this because they don't want there to be any seen as opposition to assisted suicide. So, you know, they're really pushing the concept that everyone who's a doctor must participate. We're going to go on. The Kligler case. This is very interesting because this was launched in 2016, and at the time, the court proceedings said that Dr. Kligler was terminally ill with cancer in 2016, and therefore they were recognizing that he said there's a right to assisted suicide in Massachusetts. Doesn't say it anywhere in the Constitution, but he said it did, okay? And they went to the courts, and in the end it was struck down, which was great. But, you know, that case was just decided in December, and Kligler is not only alive today, he's in remission. So think about this. He claimed in 2016 he's terminally ill, and that gave him the reason to challenge in the courts, right? He can be a plaintiff because he has a case, right? This was denying him his right to die. And yet now he's fully alive, and he's in remission. He's good to go still, and yet he was part of this case. Now, this is important. You have to understand that we've talked about the Dobbs decision a little bit. What was the Dobbs decision based on? It was based on the Glucksberg decision. You may or not realize that. And in 1997, the Supreme Court decided 9-0 in the Glucksberg decision, which was an assisted suicide decision, that there was no right to assisted suicide in America. Okay? And that's how we got the Dobbs decision. So the Massachusetts court basically agreed that, no, there's no right to assisted suicide in Massachusetts. and I mentioned that here. Dobbs was based on Glucksberg. In Dobbs, they argued that liberty interests not deeply rooted in the nation's history do not qualify as being a protected liberty interest. That came from Glucksberg. So in fact, when you're considering issues like abortion, we have to look at other court cases too that actually led to these other precedents which brought us where we're at today. And as I say, it was December 19th when the Massachusetts Supreme Court declared that there's no right to assisted suicide in Massachusetts. That doesn't mean that they can't have assisted suicide legalized. It's just no right to it, right? And we're going to jump past that. Okay. How do you do this? This is the important thing that a lot of people miss. They talk about assisted suicide by theory, right? You know, and many of us, we fear a bad death. It might be that we experienced one of a family member. And so here in the room, we're pro-life, so we're opposed to killing people. So I'm assuming everybody in the room is opposed to assisted suicide, and we're opposed to euthanasia. But if you're not, we believe it's wrong to kill people. Okay, good. Excellent. You got it. But I think when we're talking about these things in a political sense, it's good to get down to the basics. And that is, well, how is this done? How do they do it? And they use different drugs. So what happened is that they used to use a drug called Seconal. Now, what was Seconal? Seconal was it was a derivative of a sleeping pill that used to exist in the 1950s, and then it was delisted. And the reason it was delisted is because there were a lot of people who took it, and it was an effective sleeping pill, but if you took too many, it was good at killing you, right? So you had this high level of death from people taking this drug. So it was essentially delisted. And then when they legalized assisted suicide in Oregon, they were using that drug because they knew if you took a certain amount, it was 100 pills. If you took 100 pills, it was for sure going to kill you, okay? There was no question about it. But what happened is the company that owned the drug sold the rights to another company, so the price jacked up, okay? So the assisted suicide lobby got together and they said, okay, we have to find a new way to kill. They were trying to find a cheap alternative to Seconal. So they started, I'm talking about doctors like Dr. Shavelson. They got together over a coffee and whatever, maybe something else, and they discussed ways to kill people. And they came up with alternatives. And you have to know the truth about this. They were doing human experimentation to find more effective ways to kill you cheaply. Okay? So in the Seattle Times reported in March of 2017, the first Seconal alternative turned out to be too harsh, burning patients' throats, mouths and throats, causing them to scream in pain. Now remember, they sell this as death with dignity, and yet the drug they were using was causing people to scream in pain. You know, it was going to kill them, so I guess who cares if they're in pain, right? Anyway, the second drug mix they went to led to these long, drawn-out deaths. So I mentioned that. Now, the article of the Seattle Times said up to 31 hours in one case. In fact, we know 104 hours in one case in Oregon. And in fact, a couple of people didn't die at all. I don't have a problem that they didn't die at all, but it just shows you what was going on. An article published in the Atlantic magazine in January 2019 stated, and it was quoting Robert Wood, the medical director of the organization End of Life Washington. Now, why would a group like End of Life Washington need a medical director? I don't know. Is there anything really medical about this? I don't know. Anyway, and what did he say? He said, well, we know this is going to put you to sleep, and we're pretty sure it's going to kill you. I feel better already. And then he said, it worked, but with tragic catch, a few of the cases, the chloral hydrate burned the people's throats, causing severe pain, just as they expected relief. Medical Express reported in September 8th of 2020, a little-known secret not publicized by advocates of aid in dying was that while most deaths were speedy, others were very slow, some lingered for 6 to 9 hours, a few more than 3 days. And, of course, that's a one-course understatement again. So assisted suicide is not what it appears to be, but I think it's important to talk about what it is. There was actually also an article, that's not on my slide, so I'll just mention it to you. This guy, so first of all, when assisted suicide happens, it's almost never an autopsy. Because, of course, we know the cause of death. So there's almost never an autopsy. But when you have capital punishment, you have an autopsy every time afterwards, okay? So there's this researcher here in the U.S., he's actually a Canadian, but don't hold it against him, who's done significant research on the autopsies of people who died by capital punishment. Now, what he was interested in is how the drugs cause death. That's what he was interested in. And they're using the same drugs for assisted suicide. It's the same drugs. And he actually showed clearly that the death was not caused by stoppage of the heart. That's not true. What the drugs actually do is they stop the lungs. So what the death by assisted suicide actually is death by drowning. Right? Death by drowning. That's how you die, by assisted suicide. Now, they would say, but people aren't suffering. Well, you have to understand how it works. They have a three-drug system, okay? So they mix it up into this sort of package three-drug system. The first drug is to put you to sleep. Well, that makes sense. You know, they want to put you into coma quickly. The second drug is to keep you from going into convulsions and everything, because these drugs are pretty caustic and horrific, and your body might go into convulsions and throw up and all the rest of it. So the second drug prevents that. And a third drug does what? It shuts down your lungs. Anyway, the other thing is, of course, these were human trials. So it's one thing that they approve people for assisted suicide. I'm not saying there's anything good about that. Of course, there's not. I don't believe in killing people. But the other thing is that they were doing human trials. So this is crazy because, in fact, if you think about it, anybody knows anything about the Nuremberg Code, you're not supposed to do human trials on people without consent. On top of it, human trials that cause death are always wrong. Were these human trials done with full consent? And the answer is no, they were not. They were based on, though, the efficacy and the cost of the lethal drugs. So they were mixing drugs based on the likelihood of it killing you and the cost of the drugs. On March 14, 2022, the Colorado Sun published an article about Dr. Jennifer Guardiani. She's an assisted suicide doctor in Colorado. And she had reported that she had done three assisted suicides of people with anorexia. Now, let's think about this. Is anorexia a terminal condition? No. What she did is she redefined it as a chronic condition. She redefined this chronic condition as a terminal condition. We also know that in 2021 in Oregon, at least one person died by assisted suicide based on anorexia. Now, how do we know that? Because in the Oregon report, it lists the conditions that people had who died by assisted suicide. I don't know how many died based on anorexia because it doesn't give me the numbers. It only tells me the conditions, so I know at least one. Did I have it here? Right here. I mixed my slide up. Okay. A study titled Recovery from Anorexia. Now, why is this important? So what are the assisted suicide lobby is trying to do is redefine what it means to have a terminal condition. Because if you can expand who's terminal, then you can kill more people, right? In Canada, actually, you don't have to be terminal at all anymore, right? You have to have an unremitting condition. So you have to have a condition that is like a chronic condition. So this is a study, and I looked at it because this is the study on anorexia. So that's why I did it. And I looked at the study. It was over 22 years. It was published in 2017. So they had 246 participants who had eating disorders who were part of the study over a 22-year period. And it found that 62.8% of the participants with anorexia recovered fully within that 22-year period, and 68.2% with bulimia had recovered fully within that 22-year period. So what's important is that it's how do I know it's a chronic condition, not a terminal condition, because obviously not everyone recovered. Well, of the 246 participants in the study, only 18 of those people died over that 22-year period, and the study never said. It didn't say if all 18 died by anorexia or bulimia, or none of them did. I don't know. It just says 18 of the people who were part of that study over the 22-year period died. So I'm assuming this is clearly a chronic condition, and that it's even it's treated as a chronic condition. There's no question about it. Now, I have to go back a slide. Yeah. So fighting assisted suicide. I messed up my slides. I noticed that when I came to this slide. Well, what do we need to do? This is what we're all here for. We want to fight this. We want to make sure that people know that this is we are opposed to killing people. Well, first of all, using terms such as aid in dying, physician-assisted death, you know, all these terms, like in Canada, we call it medical assistance in dying. What is it? What do? They make us feel good about killing. We can't use those terms. We have to call it what it is. Call it what it is. We oppose assisted suicide. Why? Because it allows one person in law, usually a physician, but, you know, in Montana and a few other states, not Montana, in New Mexico and a few other states, they allow nurses to do it, to be directly involved with causing the death of another person. So I just say to you this way, creating exceptions to homicide or manslaughter, these are bad ideas. Like, it's a bad idea. I don't think you have to be overly religious to see that either. You know, you could be a secular person and think, is it a good idea for my doctor to have the right to kill me? I'm not sure. I think that's just a bad idea. And the other thing I point out, aid in dying, the term is used for both euthanasia and assisted suicide. And so the assisted suicide lobby, they want euthanasia. The only reason you have assisted suicide in the U.S. is because when they started getting these things legalized in Oregon, they couldn't convince the people to go for euthanasia. So they went for assisted suicide because it seemed like a lesser thing. And what they really want is to be able to just inject you and kill you. Canada legalized euthanasia and assisted suicide in June of 2016. That's not that long ago. We call it maid. I can't afford a maid. I don't make enough money. A bad joke. Less than 5 years after legalizing euthanasia, Canada passed Bill C-7. So what did we do? We eliminated the terminal illness requirement. We eliminated our 10-day waiting period. We allowed euthanasia for someone previously approved but was now incompetent. And we allowed euthanasia with someone with mental illness alone. Now that you've been listening to me for, 30-something minutes, you all qualify. The Canadian government is now discussing child euthanasia and euthanasia by advance directive. And the Quebec College of Physicians, I'll bring that up in the next slide. I'm jumping up. Let me give you some stories just to see how crazy my country's become. Remember, once you legalize killing, everything becomes upside down. Everything doesn't make sense anymore. A disabled man was told in the London, Ontario hospital, I'm in London, Ontario, that he could pay $1,500 a day if he wanted to stay in the hospital or he could have euthanasia. I'm not going to get into the full story. Alan Nichols, who lived with chronic depression, died by euthanasia even though his family begged the doctors to reevaluate his request. Now, that was in August of 2019, before we had legalized euthanasia for mental illness. A 23-year-old diabetic young man was approved for euthanasia. His mother saved his life. Now, how does his mother save his life? First of all, she was shocked that her 23-year-old son with diabetes was approved for euthanasia, and they were going to kill him at the maid clinic. They called it Maid House in Toronto, our clinic in Toronto. And she was just so beside herself, she went ballistic. She sent out press releases to the media. She named the doctor. She named the doctor. She named the place, Maid House. She made it so clear how angry she was about this that the doctor decided not to kill her son. And I was talking to her quite a lot. We put together a petition to support her case and everything, got in heavily with her. And I said, Margaret, he's been approved already. How the law works, he's approved. All your son needs is another doctor or nurse willing to kill him, and he's dead still. But she made such a big stink about this that her 23-year-old son with diabetes was approved for euthanasia that there's no other doctor that's come forward to kill him. So sometimes if it's your own kid, make a big stink about it. A 31-year-old woman with multiple chemical sensitivities was approved for euthanasia because she couldn't find a clean place to live. You can't make this stuff up. Person with disabilities asked for euthanasia based on poverty. You got to understand, when we changed the law and we eliminated terminal illness as a requirement, now all you needed to have was an irremediable medical condition. An irremediable medical condition. Now think about it. People with disabilities usually have an irremediable medical condition. So what it means is essentially almost anybody with a disability in Canada now qualifies to be killed. And then, the euthanasia lobby, they say, don't listen to Schadenberg, he lies to you. You can't have euthanasia based on poverty. You can't have it based on homelessness. And you can't have euthanasia based on an inability to obtain medical treatment. And I say, of course you can't. I know the law doesn't allow that. But the law allows euthanasia of these disabled people because they have an irremediable medical condition. The question is, why are people asking for it? That's the question. Why are they asking for it? A guy asked for euthanasia based on homelessness. Another case, there's a couple cases like this, especially a few lately, people unable to get medical treatment. They're saying, I can't get medical treatment for my condition. I can be approved for euthanasia. A veteran PTSD, he contacted Veterans Affairs for treatment for his PTSD, and he was told he should be asking for euthanasia. Then the Veterans Affairs office said, that was just a one-off, just a bad case. And then several other cases came forward. We know that at least two people with PTSD veterans died by euthanasia. They were told the same thing. And then what happened is after that, they had a bit of a hearing to find out more about what was going on because they're trying to uncover the truth. And a woman who was injured, she was a military veteran who was injured as a military person. She became a Paralympian. And here she asked Veterans Affairs she needed a wheelchair ramp. And they told her she should be considering euthanasia. You can't make this stuff up, right? A 20-year-old was approved for euthanasia even though he had an undiagnosed medical condition. Now, he was in a pretty rough shape. And I read the story. I felt really for him. But the doctors could not figure out what was wrong with him, but he was approved for euthanasia. So we need to talk about what it is. The other side claims these are deaths with dignity. They describe them as peaceful, quick, painless. Well, we all want a peaceful death, right? None of us want to suffer. Sorry, Father, none of us want to suffer. You know, so people are, you know, they're seeking often euthanasia. Why? They want to avoid a bad death. That's what they're thinking. A lot of people say, I don't know if euthanasia or assisted suicide is a good idea. I can see there could be problems, but I don't want to die like Uncle Jim. That's what a lot of people think, right? They have in their mind, I don't want to die like that, right? But we know that these are often not painless deaths at all. We know it's a lie. And we know the whole thing is about a lie. We believe in caring for people, not killing. So what are they doing, the euthanasia lobby? They're trampling on conscience rights. I mentioned about the California case. In British Columbia, you had here speaking a couple years ago, Angeline Ireland from the Delta Hospice Society. The BC government shut down the Delta Hospice Society. Why? Because the Delta Hospice Society refused to kill their patients. They shut them down. They expropriated their property. Why? Because they wouldn't kill their patients. Ontario doctors are being forced to provide an effective referral. I mentioned about the referral issue in California. In Ontario, doctors have to do an effective referral. You're in Ohio, so you actually gained a doctor recently from Ontario. One of my friends, I was at a party in November, and I was talking to this friend who's a doctor, and he was saying, Alex, you know, really good news. I just got my medical license, was just approved in Ohio. And he said, so on January 1st, I'm going to be a doctor in Steubenville, Ohio. So he's now in Steubenville, Ohio. You gained a good pro-life doctor here in Ohio. And Ontario lost him. And why? Because he says, I'm never going to refer for euthanasia. I'm never going to do euthanasia. I'm leaving Ontario. You gained him. Don't clap. We lost him. You got a good doctor. We lost him. Well, how do they sell assisted suicide? Well, they say it's my body, my choice. I don't know if you've ever saw that before. They say this is an autonomous act, but it's not. It requires the direct involvement of a physician or a nurse to approve and prescribe lethal drugs. They approve it based on agreeing with you that your life is not worth living. Many people request assisted suicide. They have issues related to their capacity or their ability to really request properly. These people are often experiencing hopelessness, despair, alienation, cognitive distortions. So there's one issue always that I mentioned in the previous slides. The reason people are approved might be related to their medical condition. But why are they asking for assisted suicide? Right? Why are they asking for it? Assisted suicide is more about abandonment than it is about autonomy. People are asking for assisted suicide because they're going through a time of their life where they feel their life lacks meaning, purpose, or value. And I've dealt with a lot of people. I've dealt with a lot of people who are approved for euthanasia, considering euthanasia. You know, I get family members who will give them my phone number. They're supporters of ours, the family members. I'll give them my phone number. I'm talking to them. And often they have a difficult medical condition. That's absolutely true. Why are they asking for it, though? They're asking for it because they see no more meaning in their life, no more purpose in their life. They want a way out. I want you to talk about these lethal drug experiments. When this thing's being debated, don't avoid the question of how it's done. Because then everybody, if you don't talk about how it's done, people think of it only in this sort of sense of, oh, they die away peacefully, they get these drugs. It's not how it works. Death by lethal drugs may not be dignified. The lethal drug cocktail experiments were inappropriate. They caused people to suffer. They broke Nuremberg ethics. We should not focus on palliative care. Now, not to say that we shouldn't support palliative care. I believe in good care. I'm a big supporter of good end-of-life care. But the problem with this is that, you know, we lost in a lot of places. We lost politically because we would say, well, we don't need assisted suicide. We need palliative care. And then the assisted suicide lobby would say to legislators, oh, we support palliative care too. We just believe in more choices. So when we put our eggs into the palliative care basket, it wasn't that we shouldn't be supporting palliative care. It's just that we weren't supporting an argument that was politically going to win. Meaning the other side is going to say, yeah, I support palliative care. I just believe in more choices. That's what they're selling. The other thing is about focusing on palliative care in the debate. I'm talking about the debate. I'm not talking about you and I. Do we support palliative care? We believe in good care. There is a problem in palliative care when we get doctors and nurses who are now abusing it. That is a problem. There's no question about it. But we do want good end-of-life care. Anyway, when you focus on palliative care, you're also focusing on the other side's talking points, which is pain and suffering. We have to focus on what assisted suicide is. That's what we have to focus on. We must work with people from all political points of view. There's no silver bullet on this issue, okay? You cannot prevent the passage of assisted suicide with one argument. It's not going to work. People with disabilities have personal experience. We need to work with them very closely on assisted suicide. They have personal experience because many of people with disabilities will talk about the fact that, you know, they have very difficult times achieving medical treatment. They often have to argue and fight for the fact that they need medical treatment. They're not treated equally within the system. And it's true whether you like it or not. It is true, sadly. We need those stories because, of course, assisted suicide is a threat to their life. You know, it's actually easier now. I tell people, use the Canadian stories. Canada's not so far from you. Whether you like it or not, we're sort of pretty close cousins. I know we're killing our people like crazy in Canada, but we're still pretty close cousins. We must encourage people to work together and never discourage people from working on their own on these issues. We're told that people ask for assisted suicide because of pain. That's what you're going to hear. The flag they're going to wave is pain. We must, you know, they say we're preventing suffering. But the data suggests that very few people actually ask for assisted suicide based on pain. Now, I'm not going to say that nobody does, obviously, because there are people who do ask for assisted suicide based on pain, but they're the minority. I can tell you about the study done by Linda Ganzini, and she was in Oregon. She spoke to 53 people who had requested assisted suicide and asked them why. Not one of them rated their pain as greater than 2 out of 5. Not one of them. Now, I'm not saying nobody experiences greater than 2 out of 5 pain when they're asking for assisted suicide, but in her study, not one of them did. There are people who are radical autonomous. You know, my body, my choice. They're demanding their lethal drugs. They want their right to die. There's a few people like that. That's correct. But they're the minority. They're the ones who get their 15 minutes of fame in the media because they're the ones demanding it. And they're contacting the media to talk to them because they want their right to die. But they're the minority. Most people are asking for assisted suicide because they're at a difficult time of their life, whether it be physical or psychological. They feel lonely. They're depressed. They fear for their future. They've lost hope, meaning, purpose, or value. Now, is there anything new about that? No. It's called being a normal human being. That's what it means. You start visiting people who are approaching death, and you start realizing pretty quick that a lot of these people are going through loneliness, depression. Why? Because they're normal human beings. I contend that the reason people die by suicide is very much the same reasons why people are dying by assisted suicide, just a different circumstance. A different circumstance, right? Most people ask for assisted death because they feel their life lacks purpose, meaning, hope. They feel that no one cares about them. They feel like they're a burden on others. And these are all normal human feelings. And why is that important? Because assisted suicide threatens your life. If you legalize it, it threatens your life. Not because you're a terrible person, not because you've rejected God, it's because you're a human being. You're going to go through these feelings. It's normal. It's normal that people go through loneliness, depression. And guess what? Suffering alone is very difficult. Some people do suffer alone. That's very difficult. These feelings of abandonment, these are the feelings that in any other circumstance would mean that our community should be providing care and support for them. But if you've legalized assisted suicide, it could be a death sentence. We live in a culture of loneliness. Let's be brutally honest. Go to a major city and ride the bus. Take a look around you. Take a look around you. There's a lot of loneliness, isolation, social abandonment. These are factors that are driving people to consider suicide and assisted suicide. These are factors that are normalizing the concept of death. You know, in a culture of loneliness and abandonment like we have today, and I'm sorry, we have a real breakdown of the family, so this is why one of the big reasons why it's happening. These are the cultural issues that feed the death culture, right? There are more people who live alone, lack significant community, feel hopeless, or feel that there's no purpose for living than ever before. And these people are seeking death by assisted suicide as a way out. I call them deaths of despair. And if you think about it also, is suicidal ideation, is that a new concept? No, there's nothing new about it. The only difference is if you legalize assisted suicide, the person going through suicidal ideation might be given lethal drugs. Right? Assisted suicide threatens my life. Why? Because human experience tells me we all go through these feelings. We all experience these things, whether we're people of faith or not. We all go through loneliness. We all go through situational depression, existential distress, especially if we're going through a life-limiting health condition. It's normal to feel that way. When a priest or a minister is visiting somebody at the bed and they say, you know, why am I still alive? Are they saying, kill me? No, they're going through a normal human response. And we need to be with these people. Suffering alone and loneliness is very difficult. We have to remember, we have a problem in 2023 because we've gotten so connected to our social media, our phones, our computers, we've lost what it means to be human. The nature of the human person. We are made to be with others, right? The culture of abandonment that leads to assisted suicide, we can change that culture by caring for others. We can change the culture by caring for others. So where assisted suicide is legal, it becomes absolutely necessary to recognize the need of the other, because you might save a life of your neighbor, your friend, family member. It is essential that people who feel that their life lacks value, feel that no one cares for them, that they're offered purpose, they're offered meaning. Well, how they offer that? Not by some psychiatrist or psychologist or social worker, but by being a friend, by being there for the person, by sharing yourself with the other. The answer is to care and to be with others, to journey with them in their difficult times of life. That's the answer. Because I may not be able to change the world, but I can change the world around me. Absolutely. And there's my slides. Let me tell you a little bit. I got 2 minutes, so I can tell you a little story. Just near the end of COVID, I was flying in from a speaking engagement, and I couldn't get a connector flight to the city of London. Like, I'm in London, Ontario, and so I'm a few hours from Toronto. So I ended up having to take a bus from the airport in Toronto to London, which is fine. And I'm sitting beside this guy, and he's telling me all this about his trip he was just on. He was in the same boat as me, couldn't get a connector flight to London. And he's telling me he was on the Western Mustangs football team. And I'm talking to him a bit more, and he tells me he's the quarterback. I'm thinking, holy camoli. He looked good. He was a nice-looking guy, you know. So we're just talking away, and we're chatting, and we're making a connection. We're making a connection. It was nice. And then he asked me what I do for a living. And I say, well, I run the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition. He says, well, what's that? And I told him, and he's a little bit quiet. He's sitting there. And then he starts giving me some really hard cases. So he started talking to me, giving me these hard cases. Well, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And I'm just sitting there, and I say to him, well, I'm opposed to killing people. And I said, I think it's a really bad idea to give a doctor or a nurse the right and law to kill me. Even if I should ask for it. I'm opposed to killing people. And he's quiet. He's sitting there. And then he says, I think I agree with you. Now, but what's the point of that? I didn't get into all the issues. I could have started talking about all the hard cases. Well, you know, we could do this. We could do sedation. But, you know, he needed to hear from me that I'm opposed to killing people. I believe it's wrong to kill people. And I think that was a connection. I didn't know if he was a religious type or not. I've got no idea. Like, I didn't meet this guy before. I have no idea who he is, right? We're just connecting. And so when we're talking about issues around life and death and dealing with people who are going through a difficult time in their life, what is the key to this issue? You can make a difference in someone's life if you connect with them. You have to connect with them. If you know someone going through a difficult time, you want to connect with them. You want to befriend them. You want to be creating this natural connection that they actually are trusting you. And then you can say to them, I think your life is valuable. You know, they might listen to you. But if there's no connection with you and you're not being, how would you say, that human nature, you're not connecting with them, they may never listen to you. So what is the key in the human person to making a difference in this culture? We need to be with others, and we need to create natural connections. Now, there must be some questions. You got some questions?
We have the questions.
I only want easy questions.
We've got a lot of very hard questions, actually. Okay. But before we ask them, can we please get a round of applause? Alex Schadenberg.
You've been listening to Alex Schadenberg, a world leader in exposing the dangerous slippery slope of legalized euthanasia and assisted suicide, and a 2023 presenter at the Bringing America Back to Life convention.
From the Median is listener-supported. Visit our website, fromthemedian.org, for further information or to make a donation to continue to make this radio program possible. Email us, radionews@fromthemedian.org, or call 440-668-4049. Through our fromthemedian.org website, you can download this or previous programs for your listening pleasure, or sign up to receive our weekly preview of upcoming guest interviews. Tune in every weeknight at the same time to listen to another great interview on From the Median as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life.
This program has been sponsored by Cleveland Right to Life and is responsible for its content.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.